Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, before we get to our play-by-play call today, Dale in Milton's been very patient hanging on the line. Hi, Dale. Sorry about that. Great to have you with us.
First, I'd like to make it clear. Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead, Dale.
Yeah, what I'd like to make clear is James Franklin, I think a lot of that man, I like the way he handles his players, how he works with the family. He's a people person, and I'm really rooting for him. However, I do have some concerns and a lot of other people, and I'm going to ask you these questions, and then I'll get off and I'll listen to your reply on the radio. My question is this. We're running the shotgun formation all the time. If we get a good center, that's fine. If it's high or it's low, that's a couple seconds lost. And you have a back like Barkley, who you really have not been able to spring him consistently. And I think he's wasting with the formation that he has. And my question is this. If I'm going to the shotgun, the quarterback gets the ball. He's either going to keep it or he's going to give it to Barkley or he's going to throw. Barkley, when he gets it, is standing there and does not have any movement at all. Linebackers are getting a good look, number one. Number two, the line has to hold out longer for that. And needless to say, Barkley's not getting the yardage that he's totally capable of doing. And my question is this. Why have they not given the other look like other schools, colleges have done, with the quarterback every once in a while getting under the center, and he can go back and throw, he can give to Barkley, or if they have another back there, and it might bring in a new dimension to open up the running game. And I just can't understand why they haven't tried that. And if you watch, as you do, the games, Barkley doesn't get a start at all. And I think the success on that last play in the overtime was that it was a good fake, and they came in on Barkley and boom, or on the quarterback, and Barkley then had some running room, and that's all he needs. He's off. So that's my question is, has that ever been brought up? Is there a reason that they don't do that, and have they ever considered that as far as putting that in and giving another look, and maybe that would open up the running game with a good passing game? But like I said, I'm all for Franklin. I hope he can stay with it.
Okay. Fair question.
Yeah, maybe you have talked about this before and I didn't hear it because I don't on every day. But I've had several people that talk to me about that and they're frustrated. And I thought, well, I'm going to call you and see what you have on that. Okay?
Thank you, Dale.
Thank you.
Yeah,
bye.
Very fair question. So let's get to it. Joe Moorhead, this is the offense that he's run, and I think Bucknell fans have seen him obviously do it while at Fordham, and he likes this. Now, to me, the timing on the run-pass option has been slow in a couple of games, and that's up to Trace McSorley to make it quicker, and it's also up to the center-guard combination to do a better job of firing off and keeping guys away from Barkley. Part of the problem for Barkley has been the fact that some of the plays up front have not been blocked well enough so that when he gets his hands on the ball, he's already surrounded. So even if he was standing back 5-6 yards and given the ball, he'd still have that same posse of guys meeting him. So instead of losing 3 or 4 yards on the play, he'd probably lose 2. And so it's got to be blocked better up front, just pure and simple. And if you can do that, that makes a big difference. That's why on the touchdown run, it's brilliantly blocked. Bates throws a big block on that play. Gaia throws a big block in that play, and it just opens up, and Mann took his guy out, and you can run a Mack truck through there. So the timing's fine on that because it's blocked well enough for up front. You need to block this thing better up front, where even with a running start, you're still going to run into this if it's not blocked well. And so you have to have that part of it. I also think that McSorley did a much better job in the Minnesota game of keeping the ball himself. Keeping the ball himself a couple of times, I think, eventually opens the door for Barkley. And last but not least, what really opens the door for Barkley is the passing game. The passing game, which went to the tune of 335 yards Saturday against Minnesota, is going to be critical to opening things up, because if you continue to throw the ball, Godwin, Gesicki, Hamilton, Tompkins, now Blacknell, who's back in the lineup this week, you're going to get that seventh and eighth guy out of the box. And you got to get them out of the box and run that thing out of the box to then make the numbers far more palatable for the offensive line and Gesicki to handle. Because right now you got six guys in there, and the six guys are attempting to block right now eight. And if you can get the passing game going, you'll get that number down to a 6-on-7 situation. And if you get it to a 6-on-7 situation, Barkley has to make one guy miss. And that becomes a far better play to run. Plus, your quarterback has to do a good job, as McSorley did as the game went along, of him keeping the ball. Where now, because against Michigan, he didn't keep the ball. Against Michigan, he didn't keep the ball once in that game. On Saturday, he ran for 73 yards. And now, if you have to account for the quarterback in this, now you really start to make the other parts of it work. But I see your point, Dale, because I know what we're used to watching with the tailback back there. I know a lot of people have wondered about not having a fullback, the fact that he's standing still. Yeah, people have asked those questions. I completely understand it. But if it's blocked right up front, and that is the key, if it's blocked right up front, it should be a highly productive offense, even in with the running back standing still. Appreciate that. Time now for the play-by-play call of the day.
So Encarnacion, a chance to be the hero. Infield in, the pitch. Swing and a drive! And this ball game is over! Encarnacion will dance around the bases. The celebration starts at home plate and continues here at Rogers Center. Encarnacion walks it off, and Toronto has a date with Texas.
John Shambi with the call on ESPN Radio last night, and it'll be Texas and Toronto again tonight. The Mets take on the Giants. All right, let's bring in Bob Flounders now from PennLive.com, Patriot News. Bob, we just heard Dale from Milton give a very thoughtful question, I thought. Sometimes you win a game, and it's more than just a win. It's how you win it. Does that game on Saturday with Minnesota, to you, fall into that category?
I think it's encouraging, Steve, that they were able to win that game. Absolutely. And I really think it really showcased just what a player like Trace McSorley can do for an offense. You know, it's not just with, you know, his arm, with his legs. I thought that was the difference in the game, his mobility, to free some things up. I was encouraged, and I'm sure Penn State fans were encouraged, that a really ravaged defense made some plays, I thought, late in regulation and in overtime. Of all the plays that happened in the second half, to me, the play that really jumped out, and it was huge, as much as Charles's long touchdown got the offense going, the Jordan Smith interception in the end zone, I thought, was absolutely crucial.
Yep.
Charles got them back into the game, but I'm not sure if Smith doesn't get that turnover, I'm not sure Penn State has any chance there, because Minnesota's pretty good in the red zone. But, yes, for them to be able to make plays in all different facets, I really felt like that's not when I watched that unfold, Steve, I thought that's something that last year's team, I just don't think they could have done. I might be wrong. But, yeah, you've seen it from Trace now three times. The Georgia game, even though they didn't win it. The Pitt game, you know, even though they didn't win it. That was a tremendous comeback. And you saw it against Minnesota. And I think it bodes well because I think in the majority of these games moving forward, Steve, I think it's going to be hanging in the balance in the fourth quarter. And you're going to absolutely going to need the quarterback, I think, to make some plays.
Right. when you look at, you know, for example, the Jordan Smith play, that is the first and only time this year that Minnesota has not scored in the red zone. Bob, that's a fifth-year guy who's really hung in there with the whole thing, and he finally got his chance and he produced something because he finally had his opportunity. What did you think? I don't know if you had a chance to talk to him afterward, but what did you think?
Yeah, he talked about it a little bit in the locker room after the game. You know, obviously, he said he's kind of been through a lot at Penn State. You're talking about a kid that Bill O'Brien recruited. Never really was able to kind of carve out a role on defense. I think he played some on special teams, but not a lot. And
right.
This year, I think when everyone was healthy, I think Penn State kind of looked at him as the fifth corner and maybe somebody who could help out in a pinch at safety. You know, Christian Campbell gets hurt in the game. Amani gets hurt. He's hurt going into the game, and before you know it, he's on the field a lot. He played well. I think he's going to continue to need to play well because they're going to have to play a lot of corner, and I'm not sure about the health of those other guys.
Situational football is something that, you know, and it's the same thing with situational basketball. Coaches go through this all the time in practice. Situation, you know, here it is 4 minutes to go. Here's the situation. You're going to make something happen. Same thing in football. How do you handle two-minute drills? How do you handle overtimes? How encouraging is it for Penn State that in practical application in situational football Saturday they produced?
Yeah, it is encouraging. It certainly didn't look good with under a minute left to go. 75 yards.
Yeah.
Well, they're on the 25, and you know it was just one of those situations where it didn't look good. A little reminiscent of the Michigan game in 2013, although they needed to get a touchdown and they were actually had to go further.
Right.
But that was a heck of a throw that Chase made to Godwin on 3rd and 10 off his back foot. I don't know that that's how you draw it up in the offensive coordinator's room, but they play. And then the wherewithal that Trace has, he talked about it. I asked him about it in the offseason, Steve. I think you probably see this, too, from your vantage point. I swear, it feels like, you know, as the game goes on and the moments get bigger, it just feels like the game slows down for Trace. He, on that 26-yard run, he didn't bat an eye. I think they caught Minnesota in a stunt. The field opened up. He didn't hesitate. He knew to get out of bounds. And just a heady play by a very smart player. And I think that you're going to see a lot more of it. But, yeah, for them to go that far in under a minute. And also, you know, I know you don't really think of place kickers as athletes. But Tyler Davis, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I just, you know, how the story of how a former soccer player, you know, from the Midwest got to Penn State and has just been, you know, you can't ask for any better from a guy like that. And that 40-yard kick he made to force overtime is probably, you know, if Jordan Smith is one, number one as an unsung player, maybe Tyler's 1A because he's been doing it all year. And like I said, I just feel like close games are going to be the norm for Penn State
yeah.
this year. And they're going to have their kicker make kicks, and Trace is going to have to make some plays late.
Yeah, and, you know, it's obviously the margin of error is going to be slim along the way for them. Thus, when you get into a game like that, when you don't have an offensive penalty and you don't turn the ball over, that's the one way you can increase your margin of error.
Yeah, and it also speaks to how many things kind of went right for Penn State after all the injuries. It almost was like things balanced out. You know, they just have not been able to catch a break health wise on the defensive side. And even then, they finally get Curtis Cochran back.
and
he makes a play, but you know, due to the rule, he's got to come out of the game because of targeting. And it just seems like. This feels like a year, Steve, that no matter what happens on the defensive side of the ball, Penn State's always going to be forced to kind of, you know, swim upstream. They solve one problem, and something else surfaces out of nowhere. I think James talked about Manny Bowen as a middle linebacker, and I think it's encouraging now that he can play another position because you just wonder when they're going to get completely healthy at linebacker. And, you know, if they're down two corners, that affects them with their ability to go to five and six defensive back steps. Now, I'm not sure that will come up and get them against Maryland, but eventually against a team that throws the ball, they're going to be in trouble.
Bob, along the way, is there enough appreciation for Chris Godwin? Because there's so much talk about so many other positions. Do people appreciate Chris Godwin enough?
Well, I get a lot of flack in Harrisburg area because I'm on the bandwagon. Like, I'm driving the bus for Chris. I would argue that when he has not played well this year, you know, the Michigan game, I thought it was kind of on him because he had a chance to make some plays and didn't. But there was in the Pitt game, I just felt like they didn't do a good enough job of creating plays for him. I didn't feel like they really looked his way. I just think that he's a guy. Penn State's got a lot of athletes at wide out, but he is the guy that I think going into the week, he's a guy that I would say, look, we're going to throw it to him 8 or 10 times. And if he can make the play 3 or 4 times, I think we're going to be in good shape. But to not get him the ball, to not get him involved early in games, you talk about their slow start. You know, the game they started fast at home against Temple, that was Chris Godwin with a catch-and-run touchdown. I think it really behooves Penn State and Joe Moorhead to force-feed him the ball early, because that's how they're going to start fast. Defenses are going to go all out to stop Saquon Barkley. They stumble to run the ball on third and short. If they're going to start fast, it's either going to be via a turnover or they're going to have to make a big play in the passing game.
What do you think of Maryland so far? I mean, is there any way to really have a read based on who they've played, or can you get one?
My sense is this is, you know, as James is in year three, those games have been 1-point games. They lost at home in 2014, Penn State did, on a late field goal. They got 5 turnovers last year in Baltimore, short circuit Maryland, and went 31-30. Given the coach's background, I'm talking about DJ Durkin, and given some of the athletes that they have in space, my sense is this is the best Maryland team that James Franklin will have coached against at Penn State. That might not be saying a lot, but I do think, given Penn State's injuries on defense, I think this is absolutely going to be a really big test for Penn State. The other thing, Steve, that I'm wondering about is, James talked about it in the press conference, the team went nuts in the locker room after they beat Minnesota, deservedly so, but that was a physical game. They expended a lot of energy, and emotionally, you know, get recharged for a noon game the next week after they were spent against Minnesota. You just wonder, you know, how much that took out of the team. Sometimes that could be a problem. I think Maryland's going to be focused. My read is that this is going to be absolutely a difficult test. And the way that I look at it, I think that Penn State might be under the gun a little bit on Saturday.
Bob, thanks so much. I guess you and I will talk tomorrow, and I appreciate your time very much. Bob Flounders, Patriot News, PennLive.com. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Some great bumper music there by our engineer today, Brent Guffey.
Oh, getting it done.
Oh,
really,
amen.
Not surprised. I mean, after getting it done. And I mean, and how about Frelazzo doing the Shikellamy football games? I mean, really. Yeah, I mean, incredible.
Talk about getting it done.
I mean, getting it done big time. And meanwhile, Wally Pipp, you know.
Yep. Well, and, you know, surprisingly, the Braves, not surprisingly, but the Braves are having a great season. They're missing an announcer. Some say coincidence, some don't.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, look, but Kev's doing a lot better. He's home. That's the good news. Frelazzo's doing great. We got a lot of great games we're going to preview tomorrow on the show. We'll do so between 3:35 and 4 o'clock tomorrow. Looking forward to that. Also tomorrow, we're going to have on Roman Stubbs from the Washington Post. Still trying to get Johnny Holiday on tomorrow, but John's got a playoff game with the Nationals. So that's part of the curveball there with Johnny.
And he does the Maryland football games, correct?
Oh, yeah. 8 years.
Wow.
One of the, I mean, truly awesome guys. I mean, just awesome guy.
Mm-hmm.
But we're definitely going to have Roman Stubbs on from the Washington Post tomorrow. So, final half hour, Bob and I will have open lines at 1-800-795-9565. Today's show, the broadcast extravaganza that it is brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. And don't forget about Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Final half hour, 30 more minutes of this, whatever that may be. Coming up on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, time now for our sports bozo of the day. There are always so many candidates.
Oh, man.
We've already talked about the NCAA.
So far, they're in first place.
With the military man who went to Afghanistan and Kuwait and wants to play basketball in Oakland and already has 3 B's and an A in college based on a world campus and summer school deal. The NCAA said, nah, not eligible. We're looking at his transcripts. Like, will you wake up? The guy's got life experience. I mean, he's out there dodging IEDs and gunfire and so forth. You guys are over there ordering paper clips. Yeah, go push more paper, will you? I'm going to go with this one. There actually was a suggestion on an ESPN show that David Blatt, who received a championship ring from the Cleveland Cavaliers, should sell it, that the Cavaliers got better after he left. Well, he was the coach for a good chunk of the season. He earned his championship ring. I mean, just like the other players that were on the team for a little bit, for a few games here and there, they all got championship rings. Man, where do people come up with these ridiculous notions? Hey, just because he got let go at midseason, what, he didn't earn a championship? They didn't win games to put themselves in a position to win the championship?
ESPN commentator has too much time on his hands.
That's ridiculous. I mean, Steve, I tell you, they do a lot of ridiculous things at that network.
They
I'll
do.
Tell you.
Steve, let me offer another bozo for today, and that was the fan up at Toronto last night.
Oh, yes. Yes, good one, Bob.
That hurled a beer can onto the playing field trying to strike one of the Baltimore players. It got really ugly, and I on the field, and the players were in serious danger. Obviously, no word if they found that fan or whether he was ejected, but it was just ugly.
Have not found him, Bob. Have not found him.
Well,
which is bad. I mean, now they'll identify him, I think, through video as to who he is, and then probably zero in. But I mean, I'm sorry, that's unconscionable.
It is. The only thing I was thinking about was, why don't we give the Baltimore Oriole players full beer cans and let them fire back? You know,
well, that's
probably
that's
not going to
okay.
happen.
No, but then again, Britain should have pitched at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, that is one. I'm not usually big on criticizing coaches or managers, especially in the moment. But that one made no sense because, again, we had just talked about this yesterday. These one-game playoffs or the playoffs themselves are a different managerial animal compared to the rest of the season, especially when you get to a one-game situation. You manage it differently than you do. First of all, you set your roster differently, and then you manage it differently because the old deal is if you don't win, you're not playing the rest of the season. Well, the Orioles aren't going to play again until April.
And, you know, coming into that contest, as you pointed out yesterday, Steve, the Orioles, at least on paper, looked to have a good advantage based on who the starting pitchers were.
Yeah, and they both performed well last night. I mean, give Stroman a lot of credit. He pitched well. I thought Tillman pitched well. But then they started going to the bullpen. When they went to the bullpens, he's sitting there, and they needed a double play to get out of it. How many times during his career was Mariano Rivera in the regular season asked to get more than a three-out save? Very rare. How many times in the postseason was Mariano Rivera asked to get sometimes a 4-5, maybe even 6-out save? Many times in his career. It's a different animal.
Yeah, don't make a change just to make a change.
I mean, what you do is you have to manage it differently. And Rivera was managed differently in the regular season than he was in the postseason because you have to. You're trying to win these things. Why does Madison Bumgarner come out of the bullpen against the Royals in Game 7 2 years ago? Because you manage Game 7 differently than you do any other game.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
One-game playoffs are Game 7s.
And speaking of Bumgarner, I think he will be making an appearance on some baseball stadium somewhere this evening, won't he?
He and Noah Syndergaard go head-to-head tonight at Citi Field in the one-game playoff. And you know what I've really noticed, especially since 2013?
Hey, by the way, how'd you like that segue? Wasn't that good?
It was beautiful.
Thank you.
Big time. I mean, really, who trained you?
Actually, you did.
No.
Sorry about that.
But this is, I've noticed the passion in ballparks. There was a one-game playoff in 2013 between the Rangers and the Rays. Now, this one-game playoff was then to get to the wild card playoff game because they had ended up tied, and they played it in Arlington. I remember watching the game that night, and the Ranger fans were going insane the entire game. Now, the Rays won the game, but I thought, wow, look at the passion in Arlington. Then the next night, the Reds played the Pirates, and the Pirates won behind Francisco Liriano. They beat Johnny Cueto. And PNC Park was alive, electric, and wild all night. And it stayed that way the entire postseason. And it's been like that in every postseason since. And I'm watching Toronto and Baltimore last night. Same thing, despite whatever was thrown on the field. Everything else, that was a loud rock Rogers Center last night. And that really is, ever since, for whatever reason, since that game in 2013 in Arlington and then the game in Pittsburgh, playoff fans have been on the edge of their seats yelling and screaming the entire time.
Well, that game in Pittsburgh at PNC Park, that was electric. And that was, what, how many years of frustration for the Pirate fans? And they were pent up, and it all came out that night. It was just an amazing sight, no question. And it seems like that is kind of the environment for playoff baseball now. The fans who maybe sit on their hands, it becomes more of the Penn State student section at a whiteout game than it does a baseball stadium.
Well, you know, I went to game two of the 2004 World Series, the one where Schilling with the bloody sock pitched.
Mm-hmm.
And the Red Sox beat the Cardinals, and they ended up sweeping the Cardinals in the series that year. But you know what? There are several things about the night that stick out to me like yesterday, but here's one of them, Bob, is that nobody got up. Nobody left.
Yeah.
All right? Nobody, maybe somebody ran down to the bathroom, whatever. But concessions? No. Bathroom breaks? No. Nobody got up. I mean, all around us. Nobody moved. I mean, I saw nobody going down the aisles. My section, I was right at the pesky pole, like mm-hmm. five rows off the field.
Sure.
In fact, the pollster that you see now, Frank Luntz.
Yes, I know Frank from yes. television, Fox yes. News, and all.
He was in my row.
Wow. Was he asking people questions about how they were feeling about the game, or
he just wanted to watch the game?
Oh well.
But nobody left until it was over, and that's what struck me about that more than anything else. Because every other game, it's like, okay, pass down the hot dog, pass down the soda, pass back the money. Guy got up, got to go to the bathroom. I remember going to a game one time with my grandfather back in the early 70s, right? And, people were up, down, and he says, did you come here to eat and drink or did you come to watch the game? And I'm sitting there like, Gramps, I think they came here to do a lot of everything.
Yeah.
But see, Gramps and I went, Grampy and I went to watch the game. And now this World Series game, everybody went to watch the game.
Yeah.
Nobody. This was not a social occasion. This was a mission occasion.
Well,
and I think that's what you're seeing in all the players. You're going to see. You look at the stands tonight when the Mets are playing against the Giants. You're going to see. You'll see no movement. Okay, they're all sitting in the same spots every second. Nobody wants to get up and go get something to eat. All right. Restroom, whatever. I mean, maybe really get pushed to the limit, But I mean, this is not beer and brat night.
Yeah, that's the seventh inning stretch takes on a different meaning in the playoffs.
Right. I mean, it's a completely different animal than anything else. Because I mean, people that are there are locked in on the game.
Oh, no question. This is the time of the year for the real diehard fans that want to really be in the stadium. They rise and fall with every pitch. That's baseball.
Exactly. I mean, this is, it's funny. I was talking about this. Now, it's a completely different level, obviously. But the Spikes won their second championship in three years. And I talked about playoff baseball, and I said it's really different that even though you're not going to have big crowds in the ballpark, it's different. I mean, you're going to. Tonight you'll see a sellout at Citi Field. You saw a sellout at Rogers last night. But in the minor leagues, you don't see that. If you get a crowd of a couple thousand, everybody's hugging each other, okay? But these are all the people that are locked in on baseball, baseball, baseball. Same thing. I didn't see people getting up, going back and forth. No movement. And they just wanted to see the team, if it was going to win or lose.
Steve, in the Today in Sports news that you gave earlier, 1921, first baseball game broadcast on radio, right?
First World Series
game. I was trying to think, was Vin Scully actually doing the announcing back then, or not sure about that? He might have been there.
Not this time.
No.
I'm actually reading Kurt Smith's book about him right now.
Okay.
And I think it's the only biography of him. And we're going to get Kurt on the show again because we've had Kurt on the show before. Did I ever tell you a great Kurt Smith story?
No.
Okay, Kurt Smith, who wrote Voices of the Game. Mm-hmm. I own four of his books, and he wrote Voices of the Game was the primary one. Loves baseball announcers. Well, the first time I ever had him on the show ever was in 1990, and that was I was doing another show at the time, and so I said, hey, I'd written to him, hey, we'd love to have you on, the whole thing, blah blah blah, and they said, great. I think I went through his publisher, and the publisher says, great, he'll do the show, it'll be Wednesday night, it'll be at 6:30, if the show's in the evening. And I said, great. And here's the number, it's 202, whatever. I'm like, yeah, okay, great. Okay, didn't think twice about it. So now it gets to be 6:30. I go to a commercial break, and so I call him. Bang, 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 202, blah, 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 blah. Woman answers, White House. I said, White House? I said, yes, the White House. I said, I'm looking for Kurt Smith. Oh, you're the one calling for Mr. Smith. I said, oh, I said, yeah. I said, what is Mr. Smith's job at the White House? Oh, he's a speechwriter for President Bush. I said, they're like, you gotta be kidding me, really?
And he just stayed late in the White House to take your call.
He was probably writing a speech about something. I don't know.
Yep.
Whatever.
And that would be the Bush 41.
Bush 41. I was like, you have to be kidding. Hey, when she answered the phone, I almost hung up, thought I got the wrong number here. It's like, then I thought, well, 202 is D.C.
That is D.C.
I mean, literally. And that's why I didn't hang up, because it made sense. For at least a moment, it did. But when she said that, I was taken aback. I definitely called the wrong number.
Yeah. Well, you're thinking, have I just been the victim of a very, very good practical joke? The White House. Yeah, right.
Is Dan Quayle there?
Yeah, exactly. Put Quayle on the phone.
We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Radio PA's Ask the Governor program serves as your direct line to Governor Tom Wolf. Connect with the governor now by going to pamatters.com and clicking the Ask the Governor link at the top of the page. Questions selected for Ask the Governor will be included in our special segment of the show dedicated to you. Have a question about transportation funding, the effects of illegal drug use on your community, the environment, or maybe taxes and the state budget? Listener and web viewer questions are selected by Radio PA for inclusion in the program. You can also submit a question by emailing directly to askthegov@pamatters.com. That's askthegov, G-O-V, at pamatters.com.
This is Governor Tom Wolf. We'll talk about the issues that affect you on Ask the Governor. You can submit your question or comment today by visiting pamatters.com.
The award-winning Ask the Governor program is an exclusive presentation of Radio PA and PAMatters.com.
They've always been offering great times for every season, and now Shade Mountain Winery invites you to their annual Harvest Festival weekend, October 8th and 9th. Dump those grapes at 1, 2, and 3 p.m. The pig roast will be happening with other foods to purchase, see T&D's Cats of the World, and live music with the Pepper Street Band all on Saturday the 8th. Then Sunday, there's Yoga in the Vines with Johanna, Runaway Stroller Live, the Sack Food Truck with delectable dishes for purchase, winemaker tours, and carriage rides by Running Spring Farm. Shade Mountain Winery, Route 104 between Middleburg and Penns Creek. See all the details online at shademountainwinery.com.
Get the best of TV free for 2 months from Service Electric Cablevision. Add SECV's Whole Home 6-Tuner DVR, HD, Premier, Local Advantage, and or Classic Cable tiers also. Plus, watch your favorite shows in your home or on the go with TV everywhere. Included at no additional cost with your TV subscription. Already a SECV customer? Call and see if you qualify for any additional upgrades to your current TV services. Get it all, but get it now. This offer ends October 28th. Call or visit secv.com/freeTV.
Hi, I'm Mike Coyne, the Co-Chief Operating Officer for Susquehanna University, and I'm here to talk about Sealands Grove Commons, the pocket park on Market Street in Sealands Grove. The Commons is the community gathering spot that was made possible by a partnership involving the Borough of Sealands Grove, the Degenstein Foundation, Susquehanna University, and Sealands Grove Projects, Incorporated. The Commons is Sealands Grove's living room, and we need your help to keep it strong for years to come. Please contact csgiving.org and select the Sealands Grove Common Endowment Fund. Thank you.
Are you planning to build, remodel, or simply update your kitchen? One of the most important decisions you will make is selecting new appliances. You should make those selections as early as possible. Hi, it's Bart from Peters Home Appliance Center. When it comes to making those tough appliance choices, Peters is here to help. Whether you're simply replacing that worn-out refrigerator or you need a complete suite of new appliances, Peters recommends General Electric. Our family has been selling and servicing GE appliances for over 50 years. When it comes to innovation and energy efficiency, GE is a top manufacturer, and Peters is proud to sell General Electric. From washers and dryers to ranges and refrigerators, dishwashers and microwave ovens, Peters and GE has you covered. So why not let the appliance experts help you plan your next appliance purchase? And remember, at Peters, we service what we sell. From our family to yours, best wishes for your home project. Peters Home Appliance Center in Sunbury.
Great to have you with us. Chad rocking and rolling in there.
Really gotten the old bumper music up a notch. Steve, I have to tell you about our man at the command center here today. When the show started, they were on generator power, which actually meant that Mark Lawrence and Jen Wakeman were outside in like a hamster wheel running to get the electricity going to keep us on the air.
Well, I'll tell you, Wakeman could do it. We don't have enough insurance.
And so we were on generator power at the start of the Steve Jones Show. And there was a vehicle hit a telephone pole literally right up here on Broadcast Mountain. The roads were closed. I couldn't get up here. So I got a special way up anyway. And then about 3:30, the power came back on and jolted everything. And Mr. Guffey there at the command center was able to keep it together. We went off for a while, but everything went dark and then kicked back on. So kudos to him.
In fact, I was one that had to fire everything back up on my end here. I was able to dial it back in, back the code back in, and get this part back on.
Yeah. Hey, and the other thing is, I thought Dale, who called in from Milton, made an excellent point.
Call.
It really was, because lots of Penn State fans are talking about, I think a way of saying it, in rather than a question, in more of an affirmative statement, is it appears that the offense is very inflexible because they've got a system, and by golly, they're going to stick with that system and not going to put the guy quarterback under center, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know if that's true or not, but that is there's a sentiment out there.
Right, they are not going to put him under center, and not only that, they're not going to huddle either.
Yeah, so, and the question becomes, do you get so set with your system that you can't then become flexible enough to change it if necessary? And that's always the thing I always wonder about with coaching.
Well, it's a system he believes in. Now, the key is you have to execute it.
Yeah.
I'm watching a game the other night. I think what game was it? Washington and Stanford on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Washington essentially ran the same play four plays in a row. And the reason they ran plays in a row is because Stanford couldn't stop it. Well, if they can't stop you and your execution is that good, you don't have to be that clever.
No, that's true.
And so it's all about, to me, it's always been about execution. Always been about execution. You know, what's the difference between the Barkley touchdown run in overtime and the Barkley play where he gets thrown for a six-yard loss and can't get started? Well, it's all about execution by five guys up front. If the five guys up front execute it, you're going to get big plays like the Barkley play in overtime. And if they don't execute and get overrun, he's going to get the ball and he's going to have no place to go. So you have to get guys out of the box at a couple of things. You have to block it better. You also have to have your pass game. And Jack Ham made the point in the pregame show on Saturday that one of the keys to Penn State winning the game dealt with the wide receivers and the pass game. That if you become successful in the pass game, you can get one more person out of that box and get it down to seven. If you get it down to seven, now Barkley is now playing a 6-on-7 game where it's his responsibility to eventually make one guy miss.
And he's pretty good at that, actually, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's real good.
He is, but you got to be able to get them out of that. And the only way to do it is there's two ways to do it. Actually, there's three ways to do it. Okay. One is, of course, blocking it well enough. Okay, so that's off the table. The other ones are the threat of McSorley running, which keeps them honest. When Maryland beat Central Florida in overtime, Maryland had two offensive series. They ran a total of five plays. On all five plays, the quarterback carried the ball after not carrying the ball during the opening 60 minutes.
Yeah.
All right. Now, McSorley has to be able to run that play and keep them honest, which then keeps them on Barkley's back. And then the third one is be effective in the passing game by getting the ball to Godwin, Hamilton, Tompkins, Charles, Blacknall, whomever, and also Gesicki, which now gets four guys out of the box, and now you're down to seven. Now it becomes a far more manageable situation because they've got to respect your passing game.
And wasn't one of the key differences between the Michigan game and the Minnesota game the lack of running from the quarterback spot?
Right, and McSorley did not run at all against Michigan. Saturday, he ran for 73 yards, a career high, and that made a big difference. Where now, because Michigan didn't once think McSorley was going to run the ball. Well, if you don't think the quarterback's going to run the ball, then you don't really care. You're all funneling right to one guy the entire time. If he's going to run the ball, now you're kept honest as to how you want to play it, and you're not as hard charging because you're worried the quarterback's going to keep it.
Well, we've got plenty of baseball tonight, Steve, as we were
Mets and Giants. Mets and Giants, Syndergaard, Bumgarner, tonight, Citi Field. Tomorrow, our high school football preview. We'll have our four announcers on to preview the games you'll hear on the Sunbury Broadcasting family of stations. Roman Stubbs, Washington Post, who covers Maryland football, is going to join us tomorrow as well. Bob, always a pleasure.
Oh, great to be with you, Steve.
Chad, always a pleasure.
And no problem.
Oh, there are lots of problems. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.